welcome to Life with the Girlfriends with Christine Marie and Julie. How you doing, Christine Marie?
I'm doing okay on a Sunday night, huh?
I'm doing okay, too. I'm
just
really,
okay. Yeah. What is this life thing with the girlfriends? Life. When I was a kid, I had, for me, the anagram for life was look inside for everything.
Oh.
And I still kind of hold true to that, that life is about looking inside for everything.
How did you get the axiom or anagram or whatever?
I guess it's not an anagram, is it? It's,
look inside for everything. Yeah, life. Yeah. What is it called?
But an anagram is like you mix up letters and...
Oh, so it's like a...
Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever. You guys know what we're talking about. Yeah. Come on. You know.
But I guess it's kind of important to keep looking inside for the truth and...
Yeah.
And,
but how did you... You said when I was younger. Are you talking about like in your teens?
Yes, like late teens.
Okay, did you come up with that or did the Catholic Church
I just always thought of that life meant look inside for everything. Because I couldn't, in my experience, couldn't find too many answers outside of myself.
Right.
And so I started to trust in that.
Yeah.
And trust in that voice that was inside of me. And we were reading Jordan Peterson this week, and he talks about that there's a kind of a ball of nerves in the stomach.
Yes.
And that people would say, you know, my gut tells me differently or something. And you know, a lot of times we think that intuition are the spirit speaking to us as some like in our heads or around our head, but it truly does reside in our gut.
Right.
So you can look inside and kind of feel like, hey, does my gut tell me yay or nay in this? And it can change.
Yeah.
And it can evolve.
Yeah.
Which is lovely, you know, that we're meant to evolve. I don't know why I'm doing this.
Okay. Well,
we decided to tell some jokes, and I have no idea.
It's been a bittersweet week.
It has been.
And we've been reading Jordan, but the news has not been pleasant. It hasn't. The news has been about Trump, of course, and depending on, you know, which show you watch, you always, Christine, say, I'm going to watch an hour of news a day or listen to an hour of news a day. And you try and get a variety.
Yes.
And sometimes you end up going, I am so schizophrenic right now. Is the world coming to an end or is this the best time in the world? I don't know.
And it's like, and I just do 60 minutes. You know that
said, okay, 60 minutes up, I'm done.
I'm done. I turn it off.
And if, you know, luckily we've got a couple of phones that if something really bad happens, we'll get a beep.
Yes.
And thank God they really mean like really bad or something really noteworthy.
Yes.
I think in the beginning of President Trump's presidency, we might get a beep about, oh, he tweeted this. Uh-huh. Ooh, we don't get those anymore.
No.
Thank God. Thank God. Those are no longer news. No. I appreciate that.
Right. Exactly.
That's good. But here we are at this bittersweet week and, you know, some suicides have happened this week, you know. Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain. I mean, and we've been struggling with just like this hit in the guts with this, especially Anthony Bourdain. I mean,
yes, I even dreamt about him last night.
Yeah.
It was really a strange dream, but I was at my dentist's office because I actually have a toothache.
Yes.
And I'm going to the dentist next week, but I have a toothache and it was keeping me up and I finally fell asleep. And I'm in my dentist's office, and there, lo and behold, is Anthony.
Yeah.
And so I want to know, like, what was he representing to not just me, but a lot of people?
Right. We're not going to have
a lot of ordinary people like me. Somehow got inside of us.
Yes. Well, because he always looked 70, you know, or 60. Meaning that I think he didn't represent the millennials. Like, does that make sense?
I don't know.
Like, to me, what he always represent is someone who didn't give an F.
Uh-huh.
Like, he wasn't the guy who got Botox.
Yeah.
He wasn't the guy that he had to look... He looked cool because he didn't have to look cool.
I mean, that's exactly... that's what you're meaning. I totally agree. Like, I used to say to Norm, like, oh, I want you to look like Anthony Bourdain, which is not like look exactly like him.
No.
But there's that rugged characteristic.
I don't care. I'm tan because I've been out in the world. You know,
I'm wrinkled.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know,
just rugged, and the way he
tattooed.
Spoke,
you loved the fact that he was tattooed.
Yeah, and the way he spoke, which was a real element of like the truth minus any sort of bullshit.
Right.
You know, it's not was not flavored. You know, the truth is was yeah. kind of raw. You know, and of course. You know, there's just these iconic images of, you know, here I am, you know, in my little world in Dixon, Illinois, you know, getting my, you know, with my dog and making sure the lawn is, you know, mowed and just, you know,
bills
things.
Are paid
that, yeah. And here he is, you know, traveling to Asia, which I'll never see, you know, or, I mean, he had this life that, I could live vicariously through,
right.
You know, because I would be that guy too if I was going to be in a different country. Like he said to they had a clip of him with Anderson Cooper, and Anderson said, "Is there anything you've turned down? Any food?" He goes, "I would never, never." He goes, "And listen, there's been times when, you know, freshness has been an issue." He said, "But listen, you're there. You're experiencing their culture, their generosity." He said, "I've had to take some antibiotics or something like that, but I would never ever turn down their food." And he, I mean, that was his, you know, his and you realize, yeah, this is who he wasn't. And I heard his editor say he was a poet, and he didn't know it, you know?
Yeah.
And how many times did because he never thought of himself as eloquent, but he had a way of seeing life and seeing things that, like, ripped your soul apart.
Right.
He just cut through, and I just feel really sad.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've never dreamt about somebody that died that day, mm-hmm. you know, that so quickly,
right.
to be in my dreams, and so
someone who you didn't know personally in a
yeah,
physical way.
So, but I mean, that's why I'm saying that somehow he's a part of all of us. Somehow,
yeah. Definitely different than Kate Spade, who I only knew of superficially,
right?
And what I knew of her was a presence of. Like one of the girls from Sex in the City, or Sex and the City, whatever that show is, just a New Yorker who, you know, had a design line. You know, I didn't know much more of her than that. And once I got to know her a little bit, it was a different perspective because, where Anthony Bourdain, he was always a visible person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't in a scripted show. It was him showing you how he viewed his life out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember enjoying where he would go to see what was all about.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing, they talked about his episode in Haiti, how he had gone there and he bought out this one. Somebody said a restaurant. It wasn't a restaurant. It was a food cart, really. If it was a restaurant, it was an outdoor restaurant.
Because mm-hmm.
I remember seeing it and he wanted to feed as many people he could feed. You know, and so forth. But what happened was just total mayhem afterwards during this process, because someone in line who was a bigger man took control over it and was kind of, you know, it was kind of like, so, well, you'll get it next or you'll get it next. So it all of a sudden it became a totalitarian kind of thing. And you could feel the energy of the episode switching to fear.
Wow.
Because you're like, okay, I don't want anybody to get hurt because I decided to pay for people to get food.
Yeah.
And what you realize is that there are sometimes there's just
that
show represented to me that there is sometimes a blowback to kindness
mm-hmm.
when it is such a big jump or a leap,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, it was a very interesting, that show
wow.
touched me in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I remember it. You think about it, like, well, how can you? I mean,
mm-hmm. I know this week you said multiple times to me, how can a person commit suicide and leave a youngster? Like,
yes.
Kate Spade, I think her daughter was 13 or 14,
yeah.
and Anthony, a daughter that was 11.
That's where I read it, yeah. That's
yeah.
true, yeah.
And I think that's true in a way, you know, but I I've heard psychiatrists say that stress or depression affects your prefrontal lobe or whatever that part right. of your brain mm-hmm. that engages in rational thinking.
Yeah.
So
decision-making process. The stress that you're under makes you not make good judgments, make bad decisions.
Yeah.
So you forget those and you're like, how would somebody do that? Well,
they do it because
their brain is affected in such a way that they're not thinking clear-headed.
Right.
And so you go, oh, God, you forget that
because
you want to get mad. Yeah. And you're like, oh, wait a minute.
There was the wife of one of the people from Lincoln Park. He committed suicide. And she said, don't ever say he committed suicide because the committing sounds like a term that has volition to it, that you're doing something with a clear thought.
Right.
Like, I'm committing this.
Yeah.
He said, no. You're not in your right mind when you do this.
You're exactly right. That's a great point. That's a great point. This other woman was talking about it. She was the head of some organization for suicide prevention. And she said, she was giving statistics, and that you just have to get the person over this one hump. Because what typically happens, if you can stop an incident from happening, most likely they'll never try again. Their standard MO for dealing with stress kicks back in, and how they cope kicks back in, and most likely they won't ever try again. And so what you realize that it is something, if we can just go like, how could they have done this? They did it because at that moment, their brain was not functioning the way it normally was functioning.
Right.
Or it wasn't, and that's not an excuse for people doing other things. However, it's a reason. And it's a reason like going, oh, okay, we've got to take this seriously.
Oh, absolutely. When I was a young therapist, I did intakes, and I intaked a young woman who had tried to commit suicide, and she was just like very fragile. She's like 22,
mm-hmm.
and just darling, but fragile. And I spent a lot of time with her, and you know, really thought that she said all the right things. Let's just put it that way. And when she was released, you know, she went back to work, which she said she loved animals, and she went back to work at a vet's place, mm-hmm. you know. And within 24 hours, she used ketamine or mm-hmm. whatever that they to kill herself.
Mm-hmm.
And all of what you know goes out the door,
right?
Because you think, you know, you're listening, and you think that you're looking at all the signs, and if someone's being truthful, but when they really want to do it,
mm-hmm.
even though you look at them and go, oh my God, your life is your darling, you know, the world's gonna be your oyster someday, you know,
right.
And when they want to do it, they do it. I can remember too, as in this sort of same period, having to go to a hospital for an intake. And this was a young man, and had tried to commit suicide. And, you know, you do an intake, which is, you know, fill out all the forms and stuff. And he had a shirt on that said, don't worry, be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always remember that. And I kept saying, all I could see as I'm, you know, doing all the forms and stuff for him is this shirt that says, don't worry, be happy.
Yeah.
But I was not able to attract him. I don't know, you know, how he did.
Interesting, though, isn't it? I mean, you wonder if he's wearing the shirt because it's like he's being ironic, or is he really...
I think it just was what he grabbed out of the drawer, unfortunately.
And he didn't see himself in the mirror, because maybe he saw himself in the mirror and going, hey, don't worry, be happy today, buddy. It's okay. It's all going to be okay.
Well, like, you know, I saw an interview, just bits and pieces with Kate Spade, and this was, I don't know, a couple years ago, and they said, if you could do one thing over, what would it be? And she said, I wouldn't worry as much.
Yeah.
And I've heard that from a lot of people.
Yes.
That they go, if I looking back across my life, what would the one thing be that I wouldn't worry as much.
Right. Well, I remember.
Because it's a game changer.
It's a game changer.
It causes your brain to change. It causes outcomes to change, I think. And well, you look, I think opportunities are missed because you're not looking there. Do you understand?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Gay and
Hendrix.
Mm-hmm. He talks about worry in his book, The Big Leap. I'm sure he talks about it in many other things. But what he talks about with worry is that you've got two choices. It comes up, and it can come up for a logical, real reason as an alarm system. Like, hey, you've got to take some action on this. And then if you can't take any action or you don't want to take action, then worry does nothing but cause stress and mess up your head.
Mm-hmm.
And floods you, because worry turns into stress. I mean, it behaves in the same kind mm-hmm. of way. Makes you make poor decisions. Now, some stress is really good. It keeps you moving forward. Mm-hmm. It's good.
Well, it's evolutionary.
It's evolutionary. Yeah. I mean, in so many ways, we all are here to
Because our ancestors experienced stress.
Stress and
evolve. On the environment.
And you're meant to evolve. I'm pointing at you, Christine, and I'm meant to evolve. I'm pointing at me. For as long as we're on this planet, and when we come back, or however we see ourselves evolving in the spiritual sense, you know, we're meant to have these quote-unquote goals, but what are our bigger goals, our values, you know, to lessen pain or suffering,
right?
And sometimes we have that in our own lives to go, how do we lessen our own pain and suffering,
mm-hmm.
And so forth. I do, you know, it's, you know, I've experienced from an outsider's view suicide by, you know, a high school friend, not a close one, you know, and so forth. But it was weird because Doug, he's had several of his male associates commit suicide, mm-hmm. at least three,
mm-hmm.
Through a period that, you know, and so forth. And I was like, these are men in their 30s. And I was shocked by that when they, you know, let it go, you know. And, mm-hmm. and I always thought, possibly just having like a bad day, you know, mm-hmm. like, because, and it worked. That one time they did it, you know, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it's this whole thing about suicide is a very interesting, I mean, it's just so sad
mm-hmm.
because everybody who's still living is left with the burden of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's who's left with the burden is everybody else who's living.
That's very, very true. And not just the family, but society.
Yeah.
Because we're always on the verge of saying, what is the value here? What is the meaning of this?
And could I have done something else?
Well, the only thing that gives us meaning on this planet, you know, is the fact that, like, if I get up in the morning, you know, you and Dad, you know, and Elliot give my life meaning.
Right.
And then there's the bigger meaning. Like, I go through some of the things I go through for just the planet's sake.
Right.
That you, hey, this is what we do to evolve in some sense, you know. So when someone does that, you know, it shakes us all.
Yeah,
it does. It shakes us all. Like, oh, wait a minute, if he can do it, then maybe I can do it. You know, and
right. Because I remember you talked about this person that you followed back in the 90s. I can't think of his name. Him and his wife had this in Vermont, had this self-sufficient farm.
Yeah.
Do you remember his name?
Yeah, I can't think of it right now. Oh, okay. I will.
Okay, so anyway, he died in his like late 90s.
He, 99.
And he went away and just stopped eating and drinking, you said.
He went into his back, they had a back cabin.
Yeah.
On his farm.
Meditated and just left his body.
Yes.
In some sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I can understand at those points.
Yes.
Taking your life. At, you know, near the mm-hmm. end of your life, you're going, mm-hmm. okay, I only see struggle and or like not like deterioration. Like mm-hmm. my body's basically gone,
mm-hmm.
almost gone. Mm-hmm. I think it's time to move on.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily call that suicide, would mm-hmm. you? But
These are tough choices.
Yeah. I was, I've been doing this course, I'm starting this course on Monday about stress and stress eating.
Right.
And some of the resources I have, this one resource talk about stress, how your body ages and how stress affects how your body ages as well. But they talked about how the healthiest people that live the longest and healthiest are, do you know who they are?
People who have chronic diseases?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, that's
I've heard that before.
Well, you know why? Because they get the most care.
They take care of themselves.
Yeah, they see the doctor a lot more. Every little thing is taken care of. That's very true. You know who else? Supreme Court justices.
Really?
Their average age is 75. Mm. Okay? Mm-hmm. They have a job for life. Mm-hmm. For life. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to work very hard. They only have a session. They only work like 2 or 3 days a week during that time. Mm-hmm. They have all their minions do all the hard work.
That sounds like Norm.
And they come back and they got, you know, they come back and then they're supposed to like, hey, you're looked upon as the supreme thought leaders of our society. Mm-hmm. And we want to know what you think and you will rule how we will behave. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I thought this was so interesting because in so many ways we have put these people on a pedestal, but for the most part we say, oh, if you're not retired by 65, because beyond 65 you're worthless. You need to move out of the way for the next generation to come through. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a counter, a totally opposite respect of what the Supreme Court justices are. Average age 75. Ginsburg, the oldest one, was born in 33. So what does that make her? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, she's in her 80s, right? Mm-hmm. She's holding on. She hasn't won. She's like, I got to hold on. But so what you have is this, I mean, I foresee and foretell what will be happening in the future because of baby boomers who are getting older and because we are having a labor crisis in some sense for a variety of different things. We will have to, and because we're living longer and it costs more money to live, you just can't live on Social Security for 3 or 4 years and like, oh, I'll die of a heart attack, you know, or whatever. We're living longer because we can live longer. That I believe in my heart the baby boomers are going to say, and you will effing respect me. You are going. I go, I don't care how, you know, hello, youngers. You haven't been on this planet long enough to know the stuff I've known. And you may think that I can be pushed away at 65 to let the new ones come in. But guess what? I refuse to be pushed away. Mm-hmm. And we will commit. We will continue to make change on this world and help and evolve the world. Evolve. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I hope to see from as we get older, not this perspective of like, because Doug and I have talked about this. We're like, oh my God, what's going to happen when we get older? Like, who will take care of us? And we think about it in the terms of, because obviously we will not be of any value anymore, right? Because that's what we're being programmed in some sense. Mm-hmm. But when you realize, wait a minute, there are cultures that you are of value the older you get. And I think that the baby boomers will bring that more to the forefront. Mm-hmm. At least I hope so. Mm. We'll see. Or unless you don't want that responsibility, girlfriend.
The baby boomers?
Yeah.
I was watching Family Guy this week, and Lois's father retired. Mm-hmm. And he started spending a lot of time at Peter and Lois's house. And like, they were like, oh my God, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. And so they decided to find this place in Florida for you know, that they're because they're fairly rich, and so well retired, you know, people in Florida. So they went down there, uh-huh, and convinced him to, you know, he and his wife to move there. And some of the things, it was kind of funny because like going, here's our movie theater, uh-huh, and when you're in our movie theater, you get to stop the movie at any given time and ask whatever you need to ask. And so they were, just for a few seconds, they were in the theater, and it would be stop. What'd he say? And then they'd go again, then somebody would tell him, and they go, I don't understand why this is going on. And then going on like that, you're like, oh my God, this happens. This really happens, you know. And and also on the Family Guy, Meg, Peter and Lois's daughter, she had to do some after school, like, she had to work at a nursing home after school for, I don't know, she did something wrong or whatever. And so, and everybody was really cruel to her, you know, the ladies and stuff were. And one day the lady goes, get me my foot cream. I need you to cut this toenail that he's poking through my slipper. And she goes into the drawer, and there's this brooch there. Uh-huh. And it's all shiny and beautiful. Uh-huh. And so she takes it, and she walks out, and she goes, oh, my God, that was so easy to steal. And so every night she starts going, and she starts stealing stuff. And then she goes to her brother, Chris, and she said, Chris, you got to come with me after school. And
yeah.
Because you can, it's oh easy to steal stuff.
Yeah.
And so Chris goes and he steals somebody's glasses. And he goes, oh, look at these glasses. Don't they make me look smart? And he goes, I'm really dizzy, but I can't, you know. And like fast forward a few seconds and they're sitting in their house in their room. And they've got like a recliner
yeah.
and it's got doilies.
Oh.
And it's got,
oh
they
gosh.
Both have like glasses on. And they've got food trays. And they go, look at this is
oh
life.
Oh my gosh, this is hysterical.
Yeah, and Chris goes, oh, hand me that ashtray. She goes, that's not an ashtray. That's somebody's ashes. He goes, oh my God, what have we done to ourselves? Look at us. And they had, you know, literally turned into old people.
That's so funny. I love that. It's like, okay, we're stealing them, but what is the point? We don't need this stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I, you know, this is a little bit on the serious side, but when grandmother was in transitioning from a nursing home down south to one closer to us so we could be near her, my grandmother has always had this one bracelet that she got from her aunt. It was a gold bracelet
yeah.
that she got from her aunt who got it at a retirement party.
Mm-hmm.
So as a retirement gift. And it was her. So I don't even know how old this bracelet was, but mm-hmm. it was very old.
Mm-hmm.
And they always say that, you know, take away everybody's jewelry that, you know, expensive stuff because it may get lost. Bunny rabbits mm-hmm. are stolen if you go in a nursing home or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no way we were going to... My grandmother wore this every day.
Of her life.
Of her life.
Yeah.
Since you, she got it.
You're not going to take that away from her.
But she promised it to me, you know, which is kind of funny, you know. But I mean, I would have loved it. I mean, that was a thing that when I was a little girl, my grandmother always says, when I die, when I go, this is going to be yours. And it, there, for no other reason, I knew that someday I might have this.
Yeah.
And it didn't mean anything to me that, oh my God, what my grandmother wore every day for her life, I will eventually get.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because I remember when she came up here. And when I would visit her in the nursing home monthly, I mean, I would drive down, see her. We'd go to the movies every month. She'd always have it. And then and I would notice it. And I would like touch it. I'm like, oh, cool. And that last time... When Doug and I went down there, we rented a van to bring her up here. And, you know, it was a wheelchair accessible van
yeah,
so she
yeah.
could lay down.
Yeah.
I'm like, where's her bracelet? Oh, my God. It had been with her whole life.
Yeah.
And it was like at this one moment, like, I'm like, where'd it go? Yeah. Where'd it go?
And we called the nursing home to
yeah,
see if like, she might love to go. Did somebody, well, we don't have people who
steal
here.
And, you know, and I knew she
really?
Had been, you know, she had been to the hospital, you know, because they go to
yeah.
the hospital once or twice. And
yeah.
it's like, you know, and so we didn't feel bad. We didn't blame anybody. It was more, and we weren't going to take it from her. It was more, we knew it was a risk.
It was just sad.
It was just sad that
yeah.
literally at that moment, I was like, man. Man, where'd it go?
You see, you realize how temporary things are.
Everything's temporary.
Nothing matters in some
but
sense.
But I didn't, you know, I got a little tear in my eye because of it. But the truth is, having that idea that whole time that, you know,
yeah.
40 plus years, I was like, oh, that's going to be mine someday. You know, it's a connection. It wasn't like it was like, oh, I'm going to be rich. And, you know, it had nothing to do with that. Except
no,
that.
No. It was a connection to continue on.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very interesting, too, because my mom's sister and my Aunt Dolores, who's gone, would say to you, you've taken such
yes.
wonderful care of your grandmother
yes.
all these years. Because you literally... For the last several years, before she even entered the nursing home, would go down there every 3 weeks or 4 weeks
yeah.
and do her bill work, make sure she had...
cover stocked.
Her, yeah.
You know, I mean she always
stuff.
Had food. She could do stuff, but I wanted to make sure that when I went down there, that, like you said, pay her bills, take care of her, so that she didn't have to worry about it as much.
Right, exactly. And
you
then you'd go out to dinner and go
yeah.
to the show and
yeah.
all that stuff. And so my Aunt Dolores, who is very, very wealthy, said, I'm going to leave you this little $50,000 life
exactly.
insurance policy.
Exactly.
So, like, when I die, I want you to have this.
Right.
Because this meant something to me that you took care of my sister.
Right.
And when she died...
Not that I was looking forward to it.
No. Come to find out.
yeah. That was no longer in play.
That did not...
Yeah.
That was taken away. When she went into her
nursing
home...
Someone has saw that and said, well, this
is not going to happen.
This is going to get, this is, we're going to stop paying on this one, or
yeah.
this is not yours,
right.
or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember going, oh, okay. I go, that.
So that can happen. The moral of the story is don't get your hopes up for anything, I guess.
Yeah, the moral of the story is that it's all fleeting anyway.
It is all fleeting.
And the only thing I say about it, there are moments I go, oh, that's going to be a nice little gift. I mean, she was 90, she was in her 90s. So I knew oh, it'd be interesting, Mm-hmm. She's not going to be 120 most likely. It'd be kind of fun. Who knows what it'll be worth, It'll be just kind of fun and whatever. It was just a nice token. And right. Then when it happened, you're like, oh, of course.
Of course.
Of course. I was listening.
Because you certainly didn't do what you did to have any.
Oh, hell no.
No.
I drove 5 hours.
Actually, I think you did it for me, honestly.
I did. I did it for you. I did it for grandmother.
Yeah.
Because, it probably was over a decade that I did
yes,
that stuff.
Easily.
And before that, I would go down and see her more often. And
yeah.
We would travel together.
Yeah.
I was her traveling companion yes. for many years. But there were many years that every 3 to 4 weeks, I'd drive 5 hours down.
Yes.
And I would leave at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And I would spend all day with her. And at 10 o'clock at night, I would take off and go home. And she's like, just spend the night. And it's like, I really can't, and sometimes on the weekend, but sometimes mm-hmm. literally I go, I have scheduled a day off every 3 weeks to go down there, mm-hmm. and so forth. And so it was nice. I enjoyed it. It was just part of my connection to her.
Yes.
And so forth. And there's somebody driving in front of our house and is he parked? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or they're maybe just looking at our lovely lives.
Thank you, Isaac.
Exactly. Thank you, Isaac. Exactly. So you're talking about the Family Guy, and this show seems so bittersweet. Yesterday, last week, I thought it was kind of funny. This show seems so bittersweet this week.
Yes.
But you're talking about the Family Guy, and there are so many things that go down the Family Guy Seth MacFarlane, he is a genius.
He is.
But if it wasn't made out of cartoons, he
right.
couldn't get away with what he says.
Oh, he could not get away with it. This week, Peter was taken into an African prison.
Yeah.
He's in jail.
Uh-huh.
And he decides to write his memoirs, and which is just crazy stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So he gets done. He goes, the end. And he goes to the cell window, and outside there's a monkey waiting.
Yeah.
And he hands it to the monkey, and he goes, give this to a French-Canadian flight attendant, and it will go all over the world. It will go viral.
Yeah.
And you're like,
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
You're
yeah.
like, what did he just say? And you can think yourself, what did he just say? What
yeah.
did he just say?
And then one, in one scene, Peter is on the phone with Lois, his wife, and he goes, we like to have phone sex. And Brian goes, you mean phone sex, right? He goes, no, phone sex. And he pulls up the saxophone and he starts playing Kenny G, And Lois is on the other end of the phone going, oh, Peter, that's so wonderful. He goes, now you play your sax. And you play it the way I told you. And she takes her phone sax and you see it go lower. You don't see that, but you know where it's at. And she starts playing, Kenny G. And you're like, yeah, nobody could get away with this unless it was a cartoon.
Exactly. Nobody could.
Yeah.
And to have a neighbor that, what's his name?
Quagmire.
Quagmire, who blatantly, has no problem saying, yeah, I'll give you a Quaalude and then I'll have sex with you. That wouldn't
You need roofies? Oh, I got those.
I got those.
Yeah.
It's totally inappropriate because of the cartoon, they get away with it. I remember one South Park episode, which I'm a big South Park fan, but I haven't watched it recently. I don't know if they're not making any more seasons. I don't know what's going on with them. But they did an episode about the Family Guy. And because when Family Guy came on the scene, people were like, what's going on here? Because they don't really have any, there's no real plot to anything. It's a
no.
small little plot
yeah.
with a lot of little tiny vignettes.
Right.
Going, well, this is really weird. This
right.
is really weird.
Right.
And sometimes you just left going, oh, I feel dirty.
Yeah, it's a take on society, though,
it really
for sure.
It is.
Yes.
And it was Cartman goes into this one room. I think it was Cartman. Well, could be one of the other kids. And they're seeing how the Family Guy's scripts are being written. They're written by manatees. And these manatees are just in this big, huge aquarium. And on one side of the aquarium, it has all these balls in it with just words or phrases on it. And like one might be peers on a toilet. You know, and on the other side, you know, they have a place to drop the balls. And then, so they just keep bringing up ideas. And together they have to like, oh, peers on the toilet. And he's in the middle of Africa. Oh!
Yeah. That's how they do
That's
it.
That's how they do it. Because we have no idea how they create these
wild scenes. He's a genius, though. And I've gotten, you know, I watch American Dad, which is like usually after or before Family Guy.
Yeah.
But, and I think that's pretty darn good as well. But I did try and watch a couple episodes of Bob's Burgers, which is like right afterwards. That just falls flat with me. That, I just do not get that family.
And I don't know who wrote Bob's Burgers.
It can't be the same, because it's just has a totally different feel, and it doesn't.
You said you liked the Family Guy. What else did you say you liked?
American Dad.
Yeah,
yeah. I love the fact that they had this alien that lives with them.
Yeah,
and this fish that's a professor or whatever.
Yeah,
and,
You're like, this is awesome.
Yeah,
yeah. Fish as a professor.
And that his wife is hot.
Yeah.
And but she can't cook. And so he's always late for dinner because he has to go have his pre-dinner. He has to have a good dinner before he comes home and eats the family slop, you know.
And Jordan, if Jordan Peterson would be looking at this family, he'd go, this family is working well, but they're all lying to each other. So they've stopped evolving because they are forgoing the peace. They're wanting their life to be peaceful, and so no growth can occur, because if the American Dad would come home and going, okay, honey.
Did you see that episode?
Yes.
The one where the alien whose ex has a psychiatrist to the family, they all come to him and he just tells them the easy answer. Way. Just lie. Just keep lying. And then the professor, who's a fish, you know, kicks the psychiatrist out, and he becomes a psychiatrist, and he's like,
I've been really trained for this. I can tell you. I can help you.
Yeah, I can tell you the tell the truth. And they all go crazy.
It
all goes to hell.
Yeah. Well, I struggle with this all the time, though, because in my personal life, I have the philosophy, I'd rather be kind than right. But being right does not mean telling the truth, because my truth is different than your truth. And somehow, it's together we can figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
We can figure out how to live a better life,
yeah,
knowing that you have your own truth and your own dreams and your goals, and I have my own truth and mm-hmm. my own dreams, and so forth, and we kind of work it out.
That's really important, that discourse. So they were just talking about like the fact that, you know, if Trump didn't participate in the G6 or the G7, right, that you don't even give us a chance to participate in the discourse of how do we evolve?
We
get better.
Yes,
you just stop it right then and there.
Yes, you know.
Can you hear Daddy?
Yeah. Are you okay, Normano? Good. I don't know if anybody else could hear it, but we should tell at least going on. Normano's just coughing. Now I know that if you're coughing, you're breathing. So we're
kind of like, should we stop the show?
No, or should I wait for like a thump? And then like, okay, well, the coughing has stopped. I must figure this out and move forward.
You think he would just like walk over and close the door?
No, of course not. No, that's not going to happen. But because I know why. Because in this household, if a door is closed, we have a sleeping dog,
yes,
which we have decided to let lie.
Yes.
Let sleeping dogs lie.
Right.
But if we close the door, he will hear the door close.
Yes, and he will be up.
He will also hear our intention of closing a door.
Yes, he knows.
I don't know how that's possible. I will go to myself, I'm going to think about doing this one activity, which is like going out into the garage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Elliot anywhere. I will make one movement, and I'll look around, and I notice that he is literally poking his head outside your bedroom door. Like, he has heard my intention.
Yes.
To go out into the garage.
Yes.
And he's like, maybe I'm going to go for a walk. Maybe I can then chase her down the hallway, which he loves to do.
Yeah.
You know, but before that, he was just a sleeping dog.
Yeah.
And I'm letting him lie. He doesn't know. But no, he heard my intention, that little son of a gun.
I just love the way he hates the vacuum cleaner. I mean, he is so typical dog.
just like Brian,
yeah,
who is smart and well-read, quote-unquote,
yes,
even though sometimes he lies about being well-read, when a vacuum cleaner comes out, he goes berserk.
Yes.
Okay, so here is how... I don't know what I've learned from Elliot. Not a lot, I have to say. You know, we learn everything we can from our dogs. Not really. Not this dog. Not
I don't
Elliot.
See you chasing the vacuum cleaner, Julie.
So we had bought a new vacuum cleaner. And what? We didn't realize how poorly our other vacuum cleaner was working.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so we bought Abyssal. It was on sale at Walmart. You know, the tariffs hadn't taken over yet, so we weren't paying a 25%
wow.
tick on that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so nothing comes assembled anymore, right? Mm-mm. And they must figure out that if somebody else has to assemble it for you, it's going to cost another $5, $10, mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. That's fine. You know, they've hired the engineers from Kia to now let everybody know we can tell you how people to assemble these easier.
Here comes your car. It's in a box.
It's in a box. Exactly. I go, we're going to give you this little tool that looks like an L. And with this little tool, you'll be able to put this car together. And so I get the box and I open it and I choose not to crate Elliot. He's just, you know, his house.
And he just sees this as a bunch of parts at this
initially
moment.
Initially, he's seen the box.
He's curious.
The box has been now acclimated to his environment.
Right.
So he doesn't have to sniff it anymore or lick it or do what it does. Whatever's new to the environment, he has a potential to
take it
and put it in his hiding
place.
Spot.
Yeah.
You could have a new pair of socks and he will have seen it, sniffed it, and he will have tried several times to mm-hmm. get to his hiding
yeah.
spot. Now, an old pair of socks, it's
doesn't
been there
care.
The whole... I've already tried it.
Yeah.
You know, no big deal. This box has been there. He can't move it anywhere. So then I finally take out the main part of the vacuum cleaner. He comes in, he looks, and he goes, okay, I'm down with this.
Mm-hmm. This is nothing at this point.
He's just
it's
looking,
just
no
some,
big deal.
It's just some tools or something.
Something going down. Mm-hmm. I then put another part together, and then I wrap the cord around, and he's starting to get a little more interested. And finally, I click in the handle. And then all hell breaks loose. It's like, what?
What did you do?
So the difference between a vacuum cleaner and this monster of a thing is a handle. The handle was the thing that pushed Elliot over the edge.
Then he knew.
It was like literally.
His brain registered. He went into the red zone.
Yes. I mean, even, so like, I have the base. I take the hose out. I have to connect the hose. You know, no big deal.
Nothing,
I connect
yeah.
the one part.
Or the cup or whatever.
Yeah, I put it in the cup. No big deal yet. And then, boom, the handle. And it was like, and he goes right for the hose.
Yeah.
Right for the hose. And I'm like, oh, son of a gun. So then I yell at him, and he's in the... There's nothing I can do to stop him.
No.
Nothing. Except I'm taller than him. He's not a German Shepherd. He's mm-hmm. he's a Wheaton. So even on his good days, I win at hide. You know, what do you call it? Like hide, not hiding things. Like fetch. You know, like I throw you the ball. He can't jump as high as I can hold it.
Mm-hmm.
And I see he knows we're talking about him because he just got up.
He did, yeah.
Yeah. And so... I literally having to carry this protective vacuum cleaner above my head, and he's jumping, trying to get it, and then I finally get it in the closet, and he gives up.
Yeah,
he does not try and open the closet. He could open the closet.
Right.
He could. It's just a push. He could do it.
Yeah.
But he chose not to do that.
Yeah.
So there's our vacuum story.
Yeah.
But now the other vacuum story is this. We took him out. He went out in his gazebo for a little while. And Dad's like, oh, I got to try this vacuum cleaner, you know?
Looks cool.
Like we put the other one. The other story of this vacuum cleaner, I think, is a very funny story. Real quick.
What is it?
Well, we had lost this vacuum cleaner.
Oh, right.
We knew
we bought a new one. We just couldn't find it.
We wanted to have a vacuum cleaner because all I had was a sweeper at the cabin, the Lodge Cottage cabin.
Right.
At Jellystone. We wanted to have one there. So we took our old one, cleaned it out, took it over there. Perfectly fine. And then I go, but don't I have a new vacuum cleaner? I bought a new vacuum cleaner. Where's that box? I went and looked in our garage, in our trunks. I'm like, what? I know I bought it. And then I go, Dad's semi was in the driveway. So that means we had one car truck stop just hanging out. I'm like, I wonder if that be that,
because that's Dad's car. Why would that vacuum cleaner be in Dad's car?
But I had taken that car because I had switched off with Normano and did shopping, and I had taken that car and went shopping with it. And I'm like, oh, and sure enough, that vacuum cleaner, that the, you know, the car is never locked, by the way.
Never.
It's an old piece of crap. It really isn't our oldest vehicle.
No, it's not our oldest vehicle.
We have a 61 MG.
It's a 60. 1960
MG.
Yeah.
Which,
that's our oldest vehicle.
That's our oldest vehicle. But, we keep asking, hey, you know, this is a perfect vehicle to drive back and forth the truck stop.
And it stays at the truck stop.
Yes, we
it's
don't
not
really
like
care.
The truck stop is like perfect.
No.
It's gotten banged up.
Yeah.
It's gotten dented.
And
it's
so
got
a
door pushed in.
Yeah.
It's a truck stop.
It's a truck stop
stuff
car.
Happens there.
And so we don't want to feel bad about it, so we let it be. And we know there will be a transition in play sometime, and there's a little anxiety about it.
Yeah.
Because that means our Mercedes will be going to the truck stop.
Oh, no.
And even though it's an older Mercedes, it's like, oh, my God.
It's a Mercedes.
It's a Mercedes. I don't want it banged up. It's got mm-hmm. leather interior. It's a nice car, you know. Yada, yada, yada. Anyway, that I digress. And now I'm moving forward. So I went, found the vacuum cleaner, got it back. So, yes, the house hadn't been vacuumed in about maybe 2 weeks.
But we have a light vacuum.
Yes.
A little, one of those little light sweeper vacuums.
Yes.
And so we were using that in between.
Exactly.
And we thought it might be doing the trick because we're adults. We're not dirty people.
And our dog does not shed.
No.
He's a Wheaton Terrier.
That's right.
He's got hair, not fur.
However,
we turned it on, and I go, you know, because I was going to throw the box away, and he's like, let's make sure it works first. So Dad turned it on in your bedroom, and he's like, I hear him screaming, like, what is going on? What is happening? What is happening? I'm like, ah! And I run in, I'm like, what's going on? He goes, did you try this vacuum cleaner already? I go, no, you're really doing it the first time. He goes, then we've got major problems in the house. I go, why? I go, I literally have only turned it on for the first time for less than a minute.
It was just a minute full. Yeah, no, it's more than that.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, just dirt.
Yeah, in our carpeting. And we haven't even done the whole room. It was
no.
just like a third of the room.
And Dad is saying it's got to be talcum powder, you know, because maybe he puts a little gold bond on his crotchal regions or whatever. Whatever old men do, I don't know.
There's no country for old men, Julie.
There is called the Supreme Court now. And there's a lot of gold bond going down there. I'm sure. And it all smells like methanol. Not methanol, menthol. Isn't that they put in gold?
Yeah, I think so.
Got a little minty hibiscus.
A minty flavor. Lavender?
No, eucalyptus.
Oh, eucalyptus, okay.
A lot of that going on down there, I'm thinking. Keep it kind of cool.
That fresh minty smell. Gee, your crotchal region smells terrific.
Exactly. And so then I chose to do the rest of the house. And I was like, what in the world? Like you said, we take care of business. We do stuff. And then I was going to town, like moving furniture. I'm like, man, get this all done. And so I took a video of it because I was just shocked. And I said, thank you, Bissell.
We sent it into Bissell. Yeah.
I'm like, thank you, Bissell. I don't usually do this. I don't do plus or minuses anywhere. I was you take your chances.
Right.
But this was a definite
plus.
Whoa, this was amazing.
Right.
And so forth. So that was a pretty special
moment
in our life.
Of life with the girlfriends for the week.
For the week, we got a new vacuum cleaner. In the midst of a
We found our new vacuum cleaner.
Exactly. In the midst of a crappy kind of bittersweet week. Well, it was interesting because I will have a Lyme update. I ended up on Friday, had a busy day and had an appointment with my eye doctor. Taking a test. I'd already seen my eye doctor, and she's like, oh, your optic nerves look better. And I'm like, great. Oh, that's awesome. Okay. And I was grateful because I wanted to cancel this one appointment to go down to Peoria to see my neurologist, ophthalmologist. And so I canceled it. You know, I'm like, great. I don't have to drive 2 hours to do this. And so she goes, well, let's take a test to make sure and see how everything's going. And so I get the test results there. I go, can I look at my test results? And she's like, sure. And the first thing she says, and I'm looking at the fluid, like in the macular, is that, or and like it's normal, you know, and there's no fluid there, and things are looking good. And then there's this one part of the test where it says, oh, your optic nerves look better, but your optic nerves are much thinner than they were. You've lost thickness in your optic nerves, in your optic nerve. I'm like, oh my God. And it said on the computer, print out possible loss. I'm like, does that mean possible vision loss? Yeah, it means possible vision loss. And I start tearing up because I'm just like, you know,
all this.
It's been a year and I really just wanted to have a clean bill of health. And she's like, well, we got to know what's going on. You know, this is just a good test. And it tracks things before we even really can recognize it. So we can start taking, you know, this might be a sign of glaucoma. And I'm like, oh my God. Or, you know, and the other thing is MS, because anything with the optic nerves, it could be a symptom of MS as well. But it definitely is a sign. I mean, so of course I go on Google and Bing and try and find, and nothing's clear cut, you know, whatever. But it was so interesting because she kept saying, I'm not diagnosing. We're just looking at the computer, because I said I want to see my results. I kind of been looking into the eyes. I know enough to know what these tests are for and so forth. But it just caught me off guard that I've lost thickness even though my eyes have gotten better in the sense of this. She goes, yeah, well, we can see, because I said I had a pseudo tumor around my one eye. She goes, oh, I can see that. She goes, all this inflammation around here was probably the pseudo tumor. And that's no longer there. I still have inflammation, but it's not as nearly as much. But the thickness of that point was better than it was now. So even though at the height of my pseudo tumor, and then even though taking antibiotics and all that stuff, I still lost thickness over the year. And we don't know, and they don't know when that occurred, or how it occurred, and
but
so
was,
forth.
But was this a test that compared the last year's test?
Yes.
Okay.
So I had improvement in the pseudotumor, but I did not have an improvement in the thickness of... I had that at that point, I had not lost thickness in my optic nerve. They were swollen, and it was neuritis. But so then I'm reading, and then finally in one post from a doctor's website or whatever, it says, typically, you know, sometimes you can get thinning of the optic nerves due to having neuritis. I'm like, well, that makes sense since that's what I had, neuritis. Mm-hmm. I know that I had neuritis most likely because of Lyme disease.
Well, that's like 90%, isn't it?
Because I had an MRI and nothing came back with positive for MS, but it did come back. I had a test as well, a bug test that said I had, that I had...
Lyme disease. Yeah.
But the most interesting thing was I was so happy that Friday because I'm like, oh, I'm going to get a clean bill of health. This is great.
And you said, wouldn't it be lovely, Mom? This is a year in the making. And if I don't have any consequences from this year.
Yes. Like at the end result, it will be a net zero.
Yeah.
Nothing, you know, just the year would have passed and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I found out, I just started crying and crying.
I know. I watched you come out, and you're holding Kleenex,
and I go, oh, shit. Yeah. And I told the woman, I go, I'm a crier. Ignore my crying. She said, I don't know how I can. I go, just ignore it. I go, I'm just, it's been a hard year, you know. But it was just so, it was different. And, like, you know, she was like, well, let's go back, and I want to review the test with you again. And I'm like, I'm not diagnosing. I'm like, no, I know you're not diagnosing. Yada, yada, yada. I said, please don't let my crying upset you because I'm just crying. No big deal.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal, you know. But she's like, you still have better eyes than people, you know, women at your age. I'm like, that means, oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I go, now I feel bad for everybody my age. Because you guys have shit vision. No.
Yeah. On the way there, you said I'm going to have this test be perfect, and I'm not going to have any.
I'm setting my intention. Yes, that's right.
And then you said to me, you know what, though, Mom? After I just said that, I heard in my heart a big no.
Yeah.
I went, oh no.
I did say that.
Yeah.
And it was the weirdest thing. Because
you went, my intention is that I will suffer no consequences. I'm going to get better.
Yeah.
And then you said, and you goes, I just heard a big no in my heart.
Yeah.
And well, that was true.
And in between me saying those things, you said, oh, I'm glad you're being so positive about this. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I wouldn't have told you this, but the truth is I heard a big no in my heart. And you said, no. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, is that me just messing with myself? Because you don't know. Your brain thinks 55,000 thoughts a day, you know, random thoughts.
Yeah.
But this was a pretty much no.
Well, there's some part of you that internally knew that you just couldn't get rid of this year.
Yeah.
And we started thinking, you know, that this is the end of your master's program.
Yeah.
You've been in for 2 years, and the things that have happened
to
you, to the family, and yet you still pursued it. You could have given up at any time.
Right.
And here you are in the tail end of your master's program, and you're looking for participants in your thesis.
Yes.
Which is stress, and is specifically weight loss and stress. And you're starting Monday night.
Yeah.
So if anybody still wants to join,
you can
they can go to weightlossandstress.com and be a participant. It's obviously free. And you'll be Monday through Friday, 8 to 8:30 at night, Central Time. And we'll do 15 minutes of content and 15 minutes of visualization and meditation. Because we're studying to see if taking down your stress via meditation, hypnosis, visualization helps allay stress eating, or what we call emotional eating.
Well, it was interesting because we talked about how meditation affects things in three ways in our life.
Right.
One way, meditation helps reduce stress.
Right.
Just naturally. It helps reduce stress. Meditation and visualization, because that word means a lot to different people, meditation, can actually help you think about, be more conscious about stress eating. So when you do stress eat, mm-hmm. or like, okay, I'm eating unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
I want to begin eating consciously,
mindfully.
Mm-hmm. Therefore, I naturally eat less.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, you know,
I usually eat from 9 o'clock to 9:30 at night. Maybe I can meditate instead.
Exactly. So all these different ways we're exchanging behavior, and how we're using meditation, hypnosis, visualizations to actually help us, in the bigger sense, replace habits. Instead of just
create new ones and replace the old ones that are not working for us.
Exactly. And so that's going to be it's a fun class. So we suggest you go there now, join up now,
and sign in. And
it's free.
Still 100%. Time.
Yes. And if it's past that date, go there anyway, because there'll be things coming up that will be.
We can. You will not be penalized for starting late. In fact,
no.
We love late. We love late bloomers.
You'll get the recordings. So everyone, we want to say thank you for being listening to Life of the Girlfriends.
Yeah,
it's been a sweet show.
Yeah, bittersweet.
Has it been
great?
It's been great.
It's been great. It was great. It was great.